Levels of teaching. There are three levels of relationship teaching assignments. The first is what we would consider a casual encounter in which it doesn't seem like anything is really happening at all. A child accidentally drops a ball in front of us, or we share an elevator with someone. So will we throw the ball back to the child in a friendly manner, or smile at the person in the elevator? These supposedly accidental encounters are no accident at all. The second level of teaching occurs when we're brought together with someone for fairly intense learning experience, perhaps for weeks or months or even years. And we will stay together as long as physical proximity serves the highest learning opportunity for both people. The third level of teaching involves a lifelong assignment. This could be a friend, a relative, a love with whom our relationship lasts a lifetime. Sometimes it's a joyful assignment, like a brilliant lifelong love affair, and sometimes it's a painful one, relatives who cause each other grief throughout their lives. Whatever it is, however, it's part of a curriculum designed by the Holy Spirit. Once we are joined in genuine relationship, it's never over. Whom God hath put together, no one and nothing can put asunder, not even death. While a particular form of relationship might change, through separation or through death, a relationship is never over because the relationship is of the Spirit and Spirit is eternal. We are in physical connection for as long a period of time as serves the highest learning opportunity, and then we merely appear to separate. The love lives on because love cannot die. And that is not a glib concept. It doesn't mean we don't cry, feel hurt, or grieve the loss of a love. But it does mean we have a context for transcending the loss. When our hearts remain open to the flow of truth, the Spirit can compensate for material loss. This is what happens, for instance, when people move through a divorce with loving intention, praying for God's healing of all hearts involved. Divorce is a spiritual issue with profound material consequences. How many children have been damaged by bitterly divorced parents? How many adults have been wounded for years or even a lifetime, not realizing the eternal nature of a love they think they permanently lost? In delivering a divorce into the hands of God, we are asking that the relationship remain blessed in spirit, though dissolved in body. All who meet will someday meet again, according to the Course in Miracles, until their relationship becomes holy. Whether we meet again in this lifetime or not, those who meet and love are tied together in eternity. Through the grace of God, we shall be reconciled one day. If we ever loved anyone, we found them first in heaven. And it is to heaven that we will return. Form versus content. Someone once sent me a photograph over the internet that had been taken by a fisherman in Newfoundland. It was a picture of an iceberg, not only the part of it that protrudes above the waterline, but also what's underneath the water. We all know, of course, that what is visible on top of the water is approximately 10% of the iceberg. But still, seeing the image was mind-blowing. It's shocking to recognize how much of life our eyes don't see. What is visible to the physical eye is the world of form, while the greater reality of a situation is not its form, but content. Marriage is form, while love is content. Age is form, while spirit is content. The only eternal reality lies in the realm of content, and content never changes. Our spiritual power lies in navigating a changing world from the perspective of that which does not change. The more we know about what's below the waterline, the more power we have above it. We usually think that if this or that happens in the world of form, then our lives will be fine. But while we habitually look to the material realm for something to complete us, our actual completion lies in knowing that the material realm itself is just one aspect of our greater life. Living in the realm of body identification rather than spirit identification, we are constantly at risk for the experience of loss. We think we lose every time something in the world of form doesn't unfold the way we wish it to. Let's say I'm in love with a man. We're brought together for a while, but then one of us decides the romantic attachment isn't working. To the ego, that means the relationship is over. To the spirit, that means the relationship simply changes form. And the spirit is correct. As much as a situation like that can bruise the heart, a higher vision of what really occurred can heal us. Love is eternal content, and whom God hath brought together, nothing, not even death itself, can put asunder. When we grieve. Grief is an important healing mechanism, a way the psyche makes the transition from one situation to another. Our contemporary mania for pulling ourselves up by the bootstraps, getting back to work as soon as possible after a deep loss, and staying active no matter what, is not always a perfect antidote to pain. In our modern bias for feeling good, we often make ourselves wrong for feeling bad. Yet grief is a bad feeling without which we can never get back to the good ones. Once I was grieving a painful situation in my own life. 6 weeks after the event, while talking to a friend about it, another friend walked out of the room saying, "I'm leaving. You guys can continue to obsess about this." I said, "Susan, a year from now, you can call it obsessing. After 6 weeks, it's still called processing." While we often bemoan the fact that people don't feel their emotions deeply enough, we're still tempted to blame them when they do. And so, instead of allowing ourselves to grieve, we often force ourselves to suppress the grief, mistaking it for negativity or self-indulgence. Yet it's dangerous to shut out or suppress our pain, because events we don't process, we are doomed to repeat, or at least act out in dysfunctional ways. The time to cry is when we need to cry. Only then will we ultimately not need to cry anymore. When a relationship is over, whether through separation or divorce, our center of emotional gravity shifts. We view life from a different spot on the mountain when someone who used to be next to us is no longer there. It's a good idea to do a 30-day prayer vigil for the person who is no longer physically present with us, whether our conscious feelings for that person are loving or not. Prayer will neutralize the feelings, lifting them to serenity and peace. Going out shopping will not do this. Dating or getting married again as fast as possible will not do this. Only being with yourself, your loved ones, and God will do this. You will internalize the change, your internal scars will heal, and you will be better than before. The spaces in between. There is a mystery to the spaces in between relationships when we have the opportunity to understand more deeply, to correct our course, and to redirect our ship if necessary. When a relationship is over, we can look back at it honestly, assess our part in it, and forgive ourselves and others if necessary. Did I or did I not show up for the relationship as authentically and honorably as I might have? Was I in it for the right reasons? Did I stay too long? Did I leave too quickly? Did I allow God to guide its course? It can be helpful to make a list of every person and circumstance associated with the situation now passing. Silently bless them all. Ask forgiveness and grant forgiveness. Place the situation in the hands of God and know that He is there. Love is everywhere. God's love will always find a way to express itself. One of the reasons we grasp at good things is because we think if we don't, we'll be left out of the joy in life. But of course, the controlling and needy behavior that results from such a belief is sure to keep our good at bay. It's when we settle into the depths of who we are, knowing that's enough, and let other people be whoever they need to be, and go wherever they need to go, that the universe delivers our optimal good in a way we can receive. Love is everywhere, but if our eyes aren't open to see it, we miss out. Who among us hasn't missed out on love because we were looking for it in one package and it came in another? Our problem is rarely a lack of love, so much as a mental block to our awareness of its presence. Relationships that mend the heart. The Holy Spirit has many ways of paving the path for us, saving us from the pain of our own delusions. Sometimes it's a teacher or a book, and often it's simply another human being. I'm often grateful for how much help I receive from people around me who can see something I can't see at a time when I most need to see it. someone will just happen to call, and I'll just happen to tell them what's going on, and they'll just happen to share their thoughts in a way that brings the clarity my mind was seeking or the peace my soul was longing for. The closer we grow to God, says A Course in Miracles, the closer we grow to our natural talent at protecting our brothers. The more aligned with the love of God we are, the better we are at being true friends. We know how to be there, to say the right things, to give casual counsel to the people we love. There are three people I often talk to on the telephone late at night. If someone were to ask me to write down on a piece of paper my most significant activities, I probably would not write talking to Richard, Victoria, and Susanna and telling them everything. Yet, actually, it's one of my most important activities because it clears my head for everything else. In fact, I think such phone calls are more important than they appear. Sociologists have now amended a traditional theory about how people respond to stress. As it turns out, the fight-or-flight syndrome that had been taken as gospel for the last few decades was derived from research based on the reactions of men only. When women were added to the research, researchers found another kind of reaction, tend or mend. In other words, women tend to build relationships as our primary response to stress. All of us have male and female aspects to our psyche. All of us fight or flee sometimes, and all of us tend and mend sometimes. When we call each other to process our thoughts and feelings, it's no accident that those calls often happen late at night, when a deeper quiet is available to the soul. From the earliest days of recorded history, people told stories around nighttime campfires. We share stories as a way of holding our psyches, indeed our cultures, together. It is difficult to feel the love of God when the love of others is unavailable. The times when we bring His comfort to each other is hardly a less important time of day. Where we are now. We're at a place where few of us can move forward without the help of another. Not because we're not whole, but finally, at last, because we are. We're no longer fractions of ourselves looking for others to complete us. We're fairly whole. And now what? Now, we must conceive new life from deep inside ourselves. And for that to occur, we must be in relationship. To co-create life, we need each other and God's help. The miracle of love that draws us to each other is a blessing, and into that blessing God pours forth Himself. We will become, in each other's arms and in His as well, a new humanity. We will conceive something new. We will grow wings of divine compassion and intelligence, and the entire world will change. God Himself will rejoice, and life will go on.